From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Chad Beeder.
And I'm Andrew Richards.
Aaron Margosis.
And welcome to Defrag Tools, the show that takes you inside Microsoft and inside Windows. We've got Aaron back for the first time in, 18 months or so.
Yeah, about a year and a half.
Cool.
Episode,
good to be back.
Episode 173.
We went and looked it up. Yeah, it's been a while. So we're up to almost 200 now. So it's been a little while. I notice you're wearing a cool t-shirt here. Keep calm.
Keep calm and run Procmon.
And run Procmon. Oh, there you go. Get that up in the shot there. Nice. Very cool. So tell us where you got this, because we have some Procmon fans that watch, I know.
Of course. So Chris Jackson came up with this one, and proceeds from this go to, actually, let me bring up this webpage. That, so I posted it on my blog, blogs, msdn.com, microsoft.com, Aaron Margosis, case of the reverting office theme, and down at the bottom is the t-shirt, and proceeds from these sales go to Seattle Humane Society, and you can get there by going to aka.ms/t-shirt/keep-calm.
Very cool.
And I like black.
Yeah.
But you can get lots of different colors.
Black is always a good choice. I like pastel black myself when I'm either black or pastel black when I want a pop of color, you know.
So who coined the term when in doubt, run process monitor? Was that?
That was David Solomon.
David Solomon's.
Yes. And so this is an adaptation of that.
Yeah. That was decades ago, I guess.
So centuries ago.
So what are you here to talk about today? We got some new technology, new
app. Today I'm here to talk about application whitelisting and this thing called Aaron Locker, which, first of all, let me get this right out of the way right away. I did not come up with that name. Okay. This is it's automation that makes App Locker feasible to use and practical to use. And I was calling it robust and practical application whitelisting based on App Locker. And Chris Jackson, who's all about branding, you know, as you can see, decided to start calling it Aaron Locker. And he called it that in public presentations. And I think he did it mostly to piss me off because he knew there's no way I would ever put a name like that on anything I did. But I decided to release it and decided I don't have a better name. You know, robust and practical application whitelisting doesn't roll off the tongue the
same
way.
And I'm guessing that acronym's not great either.
Let's
not worry too much about where that goes before we find ourselves saying something unfortunate.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so basically, I consider application whitelisting to be the next big stage, the next big thing we have to do to secure end-user workstations. So a dozen years ago or so, we started getting everybody to stop running everything as admin all the time and start running as standard user. And that was a big win, because when malware ran with admin rights on the box, it already was running on an equal footing with any security software you had. Mm-hmm. And so it was really easy not only to defeat the security software, but to completely subvert the integrity of the operating system, install kernel mode rootkits and whatever. Yeah. So we got them past that. That broke a lot of malware right away, because a lot of malware assumed that end users were running with admin rights, and so that broke. But you know, things have changed, and malware authors have adapted, and most users run as standard user today, and malware is adapted to that. And you know, take ransomware, for example. Ransomware generally does not need admin rights. Mm. It generally only needs the ability to access and modify the documents that you're allowed to access and modify.
Right.
So now the next big thing we need to do, you know, we've had antivirus and, you know, behavior detection and things like that, and it's got a certain failure rate, right. To say the least, and can cause some other issues. The next thing is application whitelisting, where we can say, look, you know, we're going to dictate ahead of time what you're allowed to run and what you're not allowed to run. And so the basic rule that this follows is, if an admin puts it on the box, it's allowed to run. So if it's under program files or is designated, like pre-approved, like it's signed by WebEx, for example, then it's allowed to run. Mm-hmm. Anything that a user can put on the box, things that are in a user writable directory, are not allowed to run. We use AppLocker to do that. AppLocker is whitelisting technology that's been built into Windows since Windows 7 and Server 2008 R2. Now in Windows 10, we have Windows Defender Application Control, which originally was called Device Guard. It is evolving, it is getting better, and there's things it can do that AppLocker will never be able to do. There's things we can do with AppLocker that are more challenging with Windows Defender Application Control, or WDAC as we call it.
So taking an example from your world, I mean, Aaron's the author of the SysInternals book. The SysInternals
tool,
or co-author.
Thank you, yeah.
Mainly ghost, you know, whatever. It's a positive tool. It's there for a good reason. It's not a nefarious tool, but it's an example of something that would be blocked generally because it's not known to be from AppLocker's not going to have its certificate in its normal list, right? In a normal operation.
Well, it depends how you do whitelisting, right? So there's a couple basic approaches that you can take. One is enumerate everything that's on the box, right? We're going to dictate what services are allowed to run and what drivers are allowed to load. And Windows Defender Application Control can do that. AppLocker cannot do that. AppLocker can be controlled by admins, and so it's not really a good tool for constraining what admins do. So if you set as your target, look, we're just controlling what end users are doing, non-administrative end users on the machine, then this becomes a viable solution. If you need something where you're going to control every single thing they can execute, you need to go Windows Defender Application Control. Something like an ATM would be a perfect use case for that.
Definitely.
Right. So as far as SysInternals tools, I put mine under program files. Mm-hmm. Whenever I put the SysInternals tools, it's program files, SysInternals, and I copy everything in there. There are some additional challenges, though, because many of the tools, they're 32-bit, and when they need to run 64-bit code, they extract out the 64-bit version to the user's temp directory and execute it from there. In my case, that fails a lot. So I try to run the native 64-bit version directly whenever it's available.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So what's this value add that Aaron Locker does on top of AppLocker?
Thing about AppLocker is, like I said, it's a great foundation. But if you try to just take the tools that it gives you and the GUI and the wizards and things like that and try to set up practical settings, configuration, it's really hard to get to something you can actually use in production. A couple of the challenges. One is the default rules include allow execution under program files in the Windows directory and nothing else. Or admins can run anything, everybody else can run under program files and the Windows directory, which is fine, but there's user writable directories, subdirectories under the Windows directory. And there's oftentimes under program files, an app will install and it'll create user writable subdirectories there, which allows a bypass. Any user can copy something into there and then execute from there. So you need to add those exceptions.
Gotcha.
And Windows does not tell you how to do that. Also, if you install the SCCM client, it creates more end user writable subdirectories under the Windows directory.
So SCCM is System Center Configuration Manager?
Yes. Well done. Yeah.
That was a good guess.
I just spell it because I can spell four-letter words, I guess.
I'm with you there.
Yeah. Another problem, though, is there are things that you need to allow to run that run out of the user profile or other user-writable directories. OneDrive, for example, is something that comes in Windows, and they found reasons that they thought it was best to install into the user profile directory and self-update from there. Mm-hmm. So, the base AppLocker rules won't allow that to run. So we need a way to allow these things to execute in a way that's easy to maintain.
Mm-hmm. And so how does this relate to store apps, which are in another area, they're in the app data?
Yeah, so the AppLocker GUI actually calls out store apps separately. And Aaron Locker actually just punts on that and says, store apps are allowed, period. Mm-hmm. Because they all run in app container.
Right.
So there's, other than phishing attempts and things like that, there's not a lot, and they have to get into the store to do that. Mm. It's a very, very low risk. You're not going to compromise, or I shouldn't say that, it's very unlikely that you're going to compromise the system going through a store app.
Gotcha.
Like compromise the user session, install software, run whenever they log on, things like that.
Yeah, definitely.
So, for store apps, Aaron Locker just says allow. Now, it can be customized, so you could actually block store apps if you want to, but it would require a little bit of hand editing.
As you say, the risk is low, and it's not really the attack vector that
right.
you're worrying about, yeah.
Right.
So should we do some demo time?
Sure. You switch over to a VM here. Oh, by the way, are we on the screen? Yeah. So this is the link, application whitelisting with Aaron Locker. This is where you can download the current version. I'm going to move it to GitHub or someplace, or I might keep posting here when I get around to it.
We'll definitely have a link below in the show notes.
Yeah. Okay, so this is basically it. It's all based on PowerShell, so if you need to edit it, you can edit it. It's a set of scripts and a big Word document and a bunch of subdirectories. The main thing to run is create policies. You run that and it'll generate a robust set of application whitelisting rules for AppLocker. For customization, you go into the customization inputs directory, and this is where you can customize things. Let me go in here and
ooh, fancy command.
And run the ISE. There's no way to say ISE star and pick up all the files, so you have to do something fancy instead.
One of these days, we've got to get Jeffrey Snover on to talk about PowerShell.
Yeah.
We keep on talking about it. Need to organize it.
So let's see. The first thing are safe paths to allow. So if you have additional directories that are read-only to standard users that standard users need to be able to execute from, all you have to do is add a line saying what directory that is. So, for example, the Windows Defender team moved a bunch of their binaries out of program files and under program data. Mm-hmm. I have my opinions about whether that's a good idea or not, or a horrible idea, but and I've shared my opinions with the team. But in the meantime,
that's where they are.
This is, so I just add this one line of text, and now when I generate the rules, this path will be allowed. Mm-hmm. I can add others. It actually adds in, if you're domain joined, it'll add in the netlog on sysvol shares of the domain so that you can run startup logon scripts.
Yeah.
Startup scripts will run automatically anyway because they're running a system, but these run as the user. So that's allowed. The next tricky thing to do is unsafe paths. Unsafe paths are user writable directories. And what this script does is it allows you to specify locations that need to be scanned for executable code, mm-hmm. including batch files, scripts, DLLs, EXEs. I do turn on DLL rules in this solution. So here's an example, right? OneDrive. We want to allow OneDrive to execute. So what it's going to do is when I run create policies, it's going to read in the content of this script. It's going to enumerate everything under local app data Microsoft OneDrive and generate rules for every single file it finds. Mm-hmm. It's going to generate a publisher rule where it can, or a hash rule if the file is not signed.
Mm-hmm. Now this is the binaries of OneDrive, not your OneDrive content.
That's correct.
The binary
yes.
of OneDrive.
This is all about allowing execution of code, EXEs, DLLs, yep. even if the extension has been renamed, script files, MSIs.
Yeah. Yeah. I say that because I know I keep a lot of executables like the debugger and a couple of other things in my OneDrive as data.
Okay.
So that's a separate.
Without creating rules for those, you would not be able to execute once you have Aaron Locker configured.
Yeah.
Trusted signers, this allows you to configure rules without actually having to see the executables. So, for example, here, find a good example. Here, we'll just go up here to the comments. Anything signed by Contoso. If I create a structure like this and output it, I'm going to get rules that will be labeled Trust All Contoso that will allow anything signed by this certificate. WebEx is an example, a real world example I use a lot because WebEx signs all their stuff. They drop it under program data, but they sign everything with their certificate. So I just say, if it's signed by WebEx, we're going to allow it. Or in a customer environment where they want to allow WebEx, I do that.
Do you think we'll get to a point where binaries that aren't signed will be we get blocked, where we won't fall back to this hashing methodology? Do you think we'll get that far?
I don't know. Something will have to drive it. I know internally at Microsoft on my own system, I have to create hash rules for a lot of things because some of our internal apps, HeadTracks, for example, does not sign anything.
Yeah.
So whenever I need to update HeadTracks, I need to regenerate rules.
Regenerate the hash,
so,
yeah.
Something needs to drive that. WDAC is all about signing, so they might drive some of that, but application whitelisting is really something that's not really caught on that much because it's been so hard.
Yeah.
So, you know.
I think if people start signing it, the barrier to entry is going to drop, and then you'll be happy to run a whitelisting scenario, right? Mm-hmm.
So let me just go ahead and create policies, and just for fun, I'll generate Excel documentation at the same time.
Whoa, documentation, that's a fancy word.
So the first thing it's doing is using sysinternals access check and enumerating directories under the Windows directory and program files to look for user writable subdirectories. Mm-hmm. And creating exceptions for those. So allow everything under the Windows directory minus these subdirectories that are user writable. It'll do the same for program files. And
now, do you ship access check with your scripts, or is that
no?
You need to have
you have
it
to download it separately. Okay. EXE files to blacklist. Scroll back up to that. There are some executables in Windows that are known to the community as things that can be used to bypass whitelisting. MSHTA, for example, the HTML application hosting application. It does not do any checks. If you run MSHTA, give it any HTA file, it'll process it and run any of the scripts in there, and you can do anything from there.
And HTA is an HTML archive?
Application. So it's a star.hta. It's basically an HTML file, but it runs basically as, it basically allows you to run a GUI interactively. So I block that. I block some other known bypass things that most end users won't need to use. Mm. One other thing I add into there in the EXE files blacklist, actually I can show you because it's you can customize it if you want to. Some things that come with the .NET framework, install util, IE exec, etc. MSHTA presentation host WMIC. Cypher.exe is one that I block. And the reason for that is Cypher.exe is a command line tool that allows you to manipulate EFS, the encrypting file system, attributes of files and directories. And most end users never need to run that.
Yeah, I've never run it.
I've never run it.
Yeah.
I use the GUI sometimes to do that.
Yeah, well, the problem with this is that ransomware has found a way to get on the box. You know, if ransomware can get on the box, they don't need to bring an encryption engine, which can raise red flags. They use cypher.exe to encrypt files.
Gotcha.
And then send the keys off to someplace else.
Yeah.
So you block that.
So I block cypher.exe by default. Now, if you are in an environment where you need cypher.exe, all you have to do is
comment that out,
rerun the thing, and it won't block cypher.exe.
One hashtag away.
Run as also, because if you're concerned about credential hygiene, you shouldn't be using run as. So someone asked that I put that in, so I put it in. Now, the thing is, this is only stopping these executables for non-admins. Admins can still run these things. Admins can run anything they want. So let's see what we got here. Additional safe paths are processed. This computer is not domain joined, so it doesn't add the path for the DC shares. Add some trusted publishers to make it easier for OneDrive to operate. Microsoft signed script files are allowed because a lot of the troubleshooting tools depend on scripts running in the user profile as the user. Mm-hmm. And so I allow Microsoft signed script files. I don't allow all Microsoft signed executables because that's way too, or all Microsoft signed DLLs because that's way too broad a set of executables because we build debuggers, we build developer tools. And if you're allowed to run those and then debug programs, you can do anything you want and bypass. So I don't allow everything signed by Microsoft. The redistributable DLLs, though, the MFC and MSVC DLLs, I allow those because a lot of software ships with those. And
exactly.
It just makes it easy to go ahead and bake these in ahead of time. So for OneDrive, generates the custom rule sets. And then fires up Excel. Let me show you, first of all, ordinarily, I want to use IE here. IE is such a great browser.
Yeah, it has a good XML browse.
go to Microsoft.com. Here we go. So this is actually the rule set that it generates. And it's XML, and it's got GUIDs, and it's got attributes, and all this stuff. And you can kind of get an idea of what's allowed and what's not, but it's a whole lot easier if you just use what ErrorLocker gives you in terms of Excel. So it generates an Excel spreadsheet that removes all the unnecessary stuff and allows you to focus on what you're interested in and builds in the sorting and filtering and things like that. So if you're interested in just the DLL rules, we can just take a look at the DLL rules. And you'll see that, you know, we've got these publisher rules, we've got these path rules, the exceptions are all listed here. So this allows execution under the Windows directory minus these subdirectories. Mm. And these are enumerated, and there's actually subdirectories of these that would be blocked also, but this already takes care of them. So I don't need to list every single user writable subdirectory, just the root level ones, the highest level ones, where I can catch all of them.
So what's the experience?
And
when you
by the way, here where it's let me find an example here. Here's one that, with OneDrive, the label is added to the name, and the description includes the path where the original file was found. So it's self-documenting. You look at the rule set, and you can figure out like why do we have this rule there? It'll tell you exactly what file it came from to find that.
So just do the simple thing. What's it look like when you violate AppLocker, ArrowLocker?
Let's do that. So
actually, just see this in action.
Let's see. First, I need to set it up. So ordinarily, in a domain joined environment or in Intune, I'm going to get to the point where we can do this through Intune as well. I'm talking with people about that. We need to set up the rules. This tool set comes with some local configuration scripts, so you can do it in a standalone system as well. And so first I'm going to configure for AppLocker, and then I'm going to apply the newest policy, the newest enforced policy, to the local group policy.
Now, I assume these commandlets are standard inbox. You don't have to add any additional
No, these
features.
Are all, this is all part of the tool set.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no, I'm saying there's no extra feature you have to add to Windows to achieve this?
AppLocker is not available in Home Edition. I don't remember if it's in Pro. I don't know what would happen if you ran it on Pro. Someone can post something to the comments field here. We'll see. But this is for constraining non-admins, so I'm going to switch over to a non-admin account to, let's see. Can I sign out? Can I lock? You have to sign out and sign back in.
Good idea, but yeah.
Because I'm in a...
Kill it.
Switch to the Toby account. I don't know if anybody remembers these names, the Abby and Toby.
I was just about to ask, what is the origin of this Abby and Toby and his other names?
This goes back to the Vista days, when they were developing Windows Vista. Rather than say, we'd like to talk about the home user who's an admin, or the home user who's a non-admin, and they just created these personas. Right. Abby is the soccer mom, who is the administrator of the box. Toby is her son, who is non-admin. And so if Toby wants to install something, he runs the MSI, and Abby comes over and using over-the-shoulder UAC elevation types in her password, allowing the execution to continue.
So this is Windows Vista era, when UAC was added.
They came up with these sort of personas of typical Microsoft Windows users.
I've always wondered if it was someone's kid that actually was real or something.
Yeah, I don't know where they came up with the actual names.
So let's see, what can I run? What should I run? I should be able to run Excel.
But that's in program files, right?
Yep, that's installed under program files, and I should be able to run Google Chrome. Yeah, so Excel's gonna work.
Now Chrome is a full installer, so it goes into...
This is the full install of Google Chrome. What this will do is, If you apply ErrorLocker and don't create any rules allowing everything signed by Google, non-admins will not be able to do per-user installs of Google Chrome or Firefox or pretty much anything. So Google Chrome runs.
So that binary was in a user app data folder, or was it in
no,
program files?
This is the program files install. So if I look at the properties, program files, x86, Google Chrome application, et cetera. So that's allowed. Mm-hmm. But if I go to, let me see, I think I created for this demo, I've got C:apps.
So obviously these aren't, this folder is not in your whitelist.
Right, there's no rules here. So vertmem test, you get this.
Right.
Okay, close Lua bug light, blocked. Right. Policy analyzer, block. Everything going to be blocked in here unless we create separate rules for it.
It reminds me of the Windows S experience, which is what this is.
S mode.
S mode, mm-hmm. Where you do get this type of, sorry, we're not allowing this application type. And that's a slightly different concept. But,
okay, yeah.
But it has the same user experience.
Yes. One of the differences being that we could, let me see if I, let me try to do this demo here. Maybe I can add in rules allowing these specific apps. And I don't recommend doing, admin on a non-admin desktop, but for demo purposes and so forth. What I will do is, when this comes up.
Loading.
I'm going to create, I'm going to change the unsafe paths to build rules for. And I'm going to say, I'm going to allow all the apps in that folder that are there right now, but nothing else. Mm-hmm. So unsafe paths. Give it a label. I'll say extra apps, paths, and this can be one or more paths. Mm-hmm. C apps, and I'm not going to worry about the version. So if
someone upgrades it, doesn't make any difference.
Yeah. So you can either say must be this version or newer, or if you say enforce min version equals false, it'll say any version. Mm-hmm. It won't apply a restriction on the version. Okay. So I've updated this file. I will create new policies.
Now remember, this is an administration command prompt inside a user session. This is,
yes.
This is not a user doing this right now.
And by the way, did you notice it did not go through the Windows directory and all that because it's already done that.
Ah.
Right, so that is in scan result. Whoops. It'll.
Did you save your
scan results script? Because what happens is when it runs through there, it grabs all the data it needs about the exe files to blacklist, it gets the list of user-writable subdirectories, and when it finds these files there, it'll just reuse them.
Cool.
And one thing about this also is once you do this and you have this information, now I can rebuild this rule set on a completely different machine. Right? So I can build it on a clean machine that doesn't have any apps, but I've already got the data that I captured before, and I can rebuild rules really quickly. So now, the rules that I've just generated should include, if I go into merge rules dynamic, this is the stuff that was dynamically generated. There's extra app rules. And if I, oops, I'm already in there. Show that. This is, we can do better than that, can't we? Open with. And Toby has to approve all that too, and get rid of that. So this fragment is our rules for those files. And this fragment gets incorporated in.
Now, if you drop a new file into this folder, it's not going to be included because
it's
a cherry pick explicit point in time rule. Yeah.
Yep. So, local configuration, apply policy to local GPO, And it might take a moment for it to take effect, but we should see it take effect fairly quickly. Let me see. I'm trying to think if there's a way I can get another. Oh, yeah, of course I can get another file in here. Let me go to. Oops. I'm in the wrong.
Just copy your notepad into it. I mean, it doesn't matter what the X is, right?
Yeah, I was going to say. Just any.
Profiles equals, here we go. Let me just find something that I don't have in there yet. Defrag.exe.
Or
that's a really ancient tool, but yeah, it'll do.
That's what the show's called. We do get the random email on the alias asking about defrag mentation problems.
Yeah, we had one the other day.
Yeah. But we still answered it.
Yeah, yeah.
If you want to ask us your defragmentation questions, we'll do our best.
Okay, so I'm going to add in that tool. Okay, yep. So I've got defrag in there. I should, at this point, be able to run Policy Analyzer, and it comes up. I can run this ancient tool I wrote back in the mid-90s. So that all works, but if I try to run defrag, that's blocked.
Cool.
Right? So right. I'm not allowing everything in this directory. I'm allowing the ones I specifically created.
I really like how a directory which is not protected enough is still secure. It's obviously it's a gaping hole otherwise.
Yes.
It's a really clean experience. Is there any built-in UI in Windows that shows you the policy like in a graphical form?
As a matter of fact, yeah.
Obviously there's
local security utility.
Security's policy.
Or policy, rather. Application control policies, app locker. These are the executable rules. And you can see here, now this is only local policy. If you are doing this in a domain, you'd need to go to the domain group policy editor. Mm-hmm. But you can sort by name, and you can see that the label has been incorporated into the names of each of these, so you can see what's what.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So then the next thing is, what happens when you need to look at the data, and how do you know when things are working or not? So you've got this policy deployed to hundreds, maybe thousands of machines. You need to know when things are going wrong, because it might be that someone's running something that they need to be allowed to run, but it's currently being blocked. Or it might be that it's doing its job and keeping people from running things they shouldn't be running.
Yeah.
So the event viewer, you go to the AppLocker event log, you'll mostly see information events. So every time AppLocker evaluates a file, mm-hmm. it's going to allow it or block it, mm-hmm. or in audit mode. So AppLocker gives you the ability to enforce rules or audit rules. Uh-huh. Audit means if the rules don't allow it, you get a warning in the event log, but the file is allowed to run. Mm-hmm. Here we're in enforce mode. So we would just see errors. So if I filter on errors and warnings, we'll probably see a few errors, and the details will tell you.
No, it's a defrag we saw before.
Mm-hmm. EXE and DLL.
Well, the general had it.
Maximize this. Yeah this OS drive apps defrag.
Very cool.
The thing is, this is, there's a lot of other noise in here, and mm-hmm. this makes it a little hard to, get to useful information. So AaronLocker provides scripts to handle that. Let me go out to the host machine here and show an example of the kind of data it can generate. This is anonymized from an actual customer where I anonymized the data. It can generate from the event log. The event log data forwarded to a central event collector. So here, this is from 62 machines reporting events over a period of a day and a half. 2,808 events. It'll tell you all the machine names and how many events per machine, including ones that did apply the policy but haven't reported any data. You can get, here are the publishers that were observed. where we've got 247 events of unsigned files, things from Gracenote, Bugsplat, Google, Microsoft, Provocraft. And now you can take this, if you say we need to allow this to run, you can. This is the information you need to put into the trusted signers script to say we want to allow everything signed by this. Mm. Or you could go more detailed and say, you know, we want to limit it to this publisher, but this product name.
Not some granular, yeah.
Okay. Or more detailed, here is internal file name, file type, and you can use that level of detail if you want. Also note here that local app data, Amazon Music. Let me go to the final tab over here that has the full details. Because what shows up in the event log is the actual path, right? Mm-hmm. So where it replaces C colon with OS drive. But other than that, OS drive users, UBaker, app data, roaming, blah, blah, blah. If you have the same user running the same thing out of each of their program director, the user profiles, you'll get a separate path for each one. Mm. So what this does is it synthesizes from that, looks for patterns like users, something, app data, or app data local, and generates a generic path. And so now you can filter on that and see, you know, we're seeing the same file across multiple users. It gives you all this level of detail, including when it happened, in a format where you can filter on specific days or times, things like that.
Very cool. Really?
So you can take this back and very quickly correct whatever needs to be corrected, update the rules to allow your end users to run whatever they need.
So it's one of those standard evolution things. You start in audit mode, collect the data, start locking it down or adding it up, whichever way you want to look at it, positive or negative, white or black.
Yeah.
Very awesome.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely something that's going to, you know, as you said, we're moving to a new era of security, and this is the
next big
technology
step
that's required to do that.
Yes, makes this a lot easier to implement and gather data and how it's working. And
very cool.
And I've been running it on my own machine for over a year, so
very positive experience.
It's been tested.
And I'll also point out, I've brought this to a couple of customers, and you know, within a week, I show them here's how it's done, and help them set up the Windows Event Forwarding, Windows Event Collection, and they've taken it over very, very quickly. Mm. So it's not like you need high levels of expertise. That was really the whole idea behind this, is to lower the bar to entry to make application whitelisting feasible. And so I've got customers who, they're good at their technology, but they picked it up just so quickly and are able to be successful and deploy application whitelisting in their environments.
And I wouldn't be surprised if there's a couple of aha moments like, oh, we didn't know that was happening.
Yes, there were a few of those.
Yes.
Yeah, that Provocraft thing. Yeah, there was an administrative assistant who was running stuff that she did at home. She'd just bring it in and, you know, working on, cutouts of paper and decals and things like that. And she was doing that on her work machine, which isn't necessarily a problem, but you don't want to allow end users to just install anything they want on the machine and start running it.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, they put her in enforce mode right away.
Well, thank you, Aaron. It was a really good in-depth look into Application Locker or App Locker and Aaron Locker. Thank you for coming in.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for having me.
As always, before I say anything, buy the book. We'll have the link below for the SysInternals Toolbox.
Troubleshooting with Windows. Troubleshooting. What's it called?
I think the new one is Troubleshooting with SysInternals Tools. I lost it. Anyway, the link will be below. Awesome book.
Yeah.
The absolute Troubleshooting with the Windows SysInternals Tools, second edition.
Right.
It's definitely
with Mark Rusinovich, co-authored by Mark Rusinovich.
Yeah, he read it afterwards.
Signed off on it.
So definitely the quintessential book for SysInternals. It's just one of those books you should have. So up there with the Windows Internals books as well.
I've got one on my shelf.
Yeah, definitely. So thank you, Aaron, again.
Thanks.
As always, put your comments below and email us at defragtools@microsoft.com to ask any questions about this or anything else, even things like defragmentation.
we do get those questions.
All right. Thank you, guys, and see you next week.
Thanks for watching.